Rebecca Robbins, and I am the host of the Santa Clarita Valley Local Leader Show. I am a local leader here in Santa Clarita and the business owner of Robbins Financial. I provide tax and financial services. To learn more about me, my business, and my services, please visit robbinsfinancial.com. That's Robbins, R-O-B-I-N-S, financial.com. But without any further delay, I would like to introduce my guest today. I am so excited to have with me Robert Mansour, who is an attorney of the law offices of Robert Mansour. He specializes in estate planning, probate, tax administration, and personal injury law. How are you today, Rob?
Good, Rebecca. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being my guest today. And can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and what you do in Santa Clarita Valley?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Thank you. Let's see here. The best way to start is with a little bit of history. I've been a lawyer since 1993. And for a good portion of my career, I was a defense lawyer, a litigation attorney, working for the insurance companies defending personal injury cases. And as such, I was a trial lawyer. And so I was in front of juries a lot, taking depositions, arbitrations, basically fighting with people all the time in adversarial kind of settings. And after, oh gosh, maybe 10 years of that, I got really tired of the fighting and decided to look to a different area of law that was a little bit more constructive. And one area that had always appealed to me was the area of estate planning, sitting down with a family and working on legal documents such as wills, living trusts, powers of attorney, health care directives, things like that, and helping the family come up with a plan that suited them. And it was so nice to sit across the table from actual clients, husband, wife, or whomever I'm sitting across the table with, and working with them to create a plan that they felt comfortable with and that they felt reflected their values. And I got away from the adversarial trial lawyer work that I had done. And so for the last several years, I've had my own practice after leaving the big firm that I was with. And it has been a very interesting transition. Most of my practice now is devoted to estate planning. And I have about 25% of my practice deals with personal injury cases, such as car accidents, slip and fall accidents, and things of that nature. And that just kind of happened because of my background. Having worked for the insurance companies as a defense lawyer, I found it kind of natural to put on the other hat, if you will, and represent victims of those accidents, since I have a very good understanding of how the other side approaches those kinds of cases. So those are really the two areas of law that I do specialize in, or I shouldn't say specialize. That's something that the bar doesn't like us to use unless it's kind of a term of art. I should say those are the areas of practice that I work on. I will say also that I help people with post-death matters, such as probate, or, for example, somebody's the trustee of their family's trust and they don't know what to do and they need some guidance. I help people with also those post-death matters as well.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you for sharing with us, Rob. Now, I'd like to actually focus on probably what you were referring to earlier was that estate planning. Can you explain to us what is meant by estate planning?
Of course. And I think the first thing that we should do is talk about this word estate. And that, I think, turns a lot of people off and they figure, you know, estate planning is not for me, because the first thing they think of when they think of the word estate is they think of somebody living in a big mansion, somebody who is very, very wealthy, you know, who plays polo on the weekends and speaks with a fake British accent. That is not, the word estate, I think, tends to mislead a lot of people. The way I tell people is to think of the word estate as simply being equivalent to the term stuff. Everybody has stuff. You might have $50 to your name. You might have $50 million to your name. That is your stuff, and it could include real estate. It could include checking accounts, savings accounts, any kinds of bank accounts, investment accounts of any sort, you know, jewelry, clothing, all of the things that you own, stocks, bonds, all of those things are part of your quote-unquote stuff. And that's all estate planning is. It is planning what to do with your stuff. And it's two components, essentially. Number one, planning who is going to be in charge of your stuff, if you will, if something happens to you. Never mind the issue of death. Most people think of estate planning to think about dying. It's really, you know, it's really about a lot more than that. It's about empowering people to act on your behalf in case something ever happens to you, whether it is a car accident, dementia, Alzheimer's disease, a coma, something happens where you're no longer able to handle your affairs. You want to make sure that you give people the legal tools that they need to be able to assist you. And then, of course, the other component is after you pass away, you get to control where your stuff goes and to whom it goes and in what manner. So by preparing these legal documents in advance, by creating this estate plan with your stuff, you get to control a lot more of what happens rather than just leaving things to chance. Let me just also address one more thing here, Rebecca.
Okay.
People always say, you know, isn't this what wealthy people do? Don't wealthy people do estate planning? Why should I? And I say, look, yes, wealthy people do estate planning, and wealthy people know how to stay wealthy. That's one of the things that they do very well. And we, as average folks, if there are any average folks listening to this, I consider myself average folks, we need to learn from the wealthy people. We need to do what they do. And they are using the very same legal tools that are available to everyone, but most people don't think it's for them. And then what happens in this country, I read an interesting article, most of the wealth in this country, especially in the middle class, is lost between one and two generations. It's gone. And that is because the average people don't know how to transfer wealth from one generation to another. They don't know how to preserve it. They don't know how to insure against problems and things of that nature. So wealthy people know how to do that, and we need to learn from them and do what they do and preserve the wealth in our family and make sure that it gets to the right people.
So, Rob, what you're telling us is no matter if our stuff is worth, in our mind, $50 or $50 million, we should consider sitting down with someone and doing an estate plan. Is that correct?
That's exactly correct. You know, one of the things that people tell me is they say, look, I don't have enough money to do estate planning. I don't have enough to protect. And I tell them, you know, the truth of the matter is wealthy people, like let's say the example that I often use is about Bill Gates. If Bill Gates lost $1 million from his estate, he'd probably be okay. But if an average person loses a good portion of their estate to legal fees or attorneys or the court system or the hospital bills or whatever the case may be, that will hurt that person much more than it would hurt a very wealthy person. So you're absolutely right.
And, you know, one of the things, too, and that's important in estate planning is if you have children, will you address that for us? Why is estate planning important if you have minor children?
Well, minor children can't really own anything. I mean, they can, for example, if my wife and I were to pass away without any planning whatsoever, our home would eventually go to our children. Yes, I have two kids. It would eventually go to them, but children cannot own real estate. They are minors. They have to be 18 years or of age or older in California. And, you know, one of the problems is that they can't own real estate. They can't own, for example, here's another problem I'll tell you. This is a very common problem, life insurance policies. Let's say somebody has a life insurance policy and they put their children as a beneficiary of that life insurance policy. The insurance company is not going to write a check to a 10-year-old kid. They're not going to write a check to an 11-year-old kid. They're not going to do that. So what are they going to do? They're going to tell the kid to wait until they're 18 years of age, and then the child will get everything at that time. So, for example, I have $1 million life insurance on my life. If I were to pass away and my wife were to pass away in a common accident with me, my children at the age of 18 would each get $500,000, a check made out to them free and clear. And that's not exactly the best way to transfer wealth, because I know, given my own history and my youth, I don't think they will handle the money very well at that age. And there's just so many other reasons. For example, a child will have to go to court and have a guardian appointed to them. And that can be a very lengthy and expensive process as well. So I'm not a big fan of, I mean, I am a big fan of estate planning, especially when it comes to protecting kids and making sure that they are taken care of. And also, this has nothing to do with money. You get to name the guardians for your children. In an estate plan, in any good estate plan, people with minor children should take the time to name guardians for their kids. That way you get to choose who takes care of your kids and not the state of California or some judge, because the truth of the matter is anybody can get in line to be the guardian of your kids, and sometimes that can lead to family problems, infighting. It is much better for you to choose who's going to take care of your children in advance, and you can be as specific as you want in your documents as to where you want your children to grow up, if you want them to live together, if you want your children to be raised in a particular faith, with any kind of information regarding education of your children. All of that can be included in your legal documents. So absolutely, taking care of kids is one of the biggest reasons for doing an estate plan.
And you know, Rob, with that, we're going to have to take a break, but we'll be right back with Robert Mansour, attorney, and we'll be talking more about estate planning. Stay tuned. Hello, this is Rebecca Robbins, and I am your host of the Santa Clarita Valley Local Leader Show, and I am back with Robert Mansour, attorney of the law offices of Robert Mansour. And Robert, we are talking about the importance of estate planning today, and I wanted to ask you, what happens if someone does absolutely nothing?
Well, you know, if somebody does absolutely nothing, first of all, I should say that that is probably the most popular estate plan. Basically doing nothing and just kind of hoping things work out, crossing your fingers and hoping things work out for, you know, for the better. And also, it is a free plan, so you don't have to pay any money to do nothing, which is another reason why people like it. But I'm being facetious because it is something that really we should spend a couple of minutes talking about. First thing, let me give you a couple of examples of how doing nothing may not work out. I had a client, he came to me, and he had just gotten a divorce. And one of the reasons that he got a divorce was because his wife was spending far too much money. He would make a dollar, she would spend $2. And he comes to me and he says, look, Rob, we had financial problems, we got a divorce, and what if I do nothing? That's what he tells me. I said, if you do nothing, the state of California already has dictated what's going to happen with your stuff. And if he remains unmarried, everything is going to go to his daughter. And he said, well, that's terrific. That's exactly what I want. He says, I have a real estate, and I have a life insurance policy for $500,000. I said, great. All of that is going to go to your daughter. And then he goes, super. I guess I'll do nothing. I said, hold on a minute. How old is your daughter? And he says, well, she's 8 years old. I said, 8 years old? I said, Tim, no insurance company is going to write a check to an 8-year-old. I said, your house will not go to an 8-year-old. I said, it's going to go to your child's guardian. And I said, who is your child's guardian? And guess what? It's his ex-wife. So if he did nothing, all of his work and money and estate is going to go basically to the control of his ex-wife. Another example that I have that I often use to illustrate doing nothing, a very wealthy client called me and she says, look, what if my husband and I do nothing? I said, if you do nothing, then once again, the state of California will tell, you know, where your assets go. It'll go to your kids. And she says, well, we don't have any kids. I said, well, then it'll go to your parents. And she says, oh, our parents have passed away. I said, well, then next in line would be your siblings. And she kind of pauses and she says, well, I have this one brother. I said, well, then everything will go to him. And she said, we're coming to see you right away, Mr. Mansour, because she did not want everything to be going to her brother because they don't have a good relationship. And she didn't want everything that she and her husband had worked for to end up going to her brother. So sometimes by doing nothing, everything can end up in the wrong hands. So I think that that's probably the best thing to say about that, that state law will dictate where your assets go. And also, if you do nothing, you could end up in court going through the probate process. You know, the probate process is simply the court supervising the transfer of your assets. And that's very costly. It costs about 5% of the gross assets. So just on a $700,000 home, you could be looking at about $35,000 in fees just for the court to help and assist in transferring an asset from you to whomever it needs to go to. When, if you plan ahead, you can avoid the court system entirely, especially if you use something like a living trust or another kind of vehicle.
So, Rob, would you recommend if someone's thinking about doing nothing, at least invest an hour of their time with an attorney who can specifically tell them if they do nothing, this is your situation. It's going to go to your child. It's going to go to your brother. It's going to go to your ex.
Yeah,
would you recommend someone at least sit down with an attorney for an hour and find out their individual situation?
One of the things that I provide for my clients, Rebecca, is a free consultation. If they have no documents, we sit down and we map out what's going to happen if you guys do nothing. And we basically take a look at that scenario, and we ask ourselves if we're comfortable with that. And 9 times out of 10, or even more so, they are not comfortable with that. And we end up creating a plan. So if you don't create a plan, it's just going to happen the way California law dictates. So, yes, it's a good idea to sit down with a professional and walk through it and see how the plan might help avoid the disaster of doing nothing.
Okay, and with that note, we're going to take a break, and we will be right back with Robert Mansour, attorney of the law offices of Robert Mansour. Stay tuned. Hello, this is Rebecca Robbins, your host of the Santa Clarita Valley Local Leaders Show, and I am back with Robert Mansour, attorney of the law offices of Robert Mansour, and we are talking about estate planning. And Rob, I wanted to ask you, what are your thoughts about joint ownership of assets?
Joint ownership of assets is a very popular approach that a lot of people use, especially married couples use joint ownership by default. They basically own their bank accounts together. They own their real estate together. They own investment accounts together. And it's basically, you know, husband's name on the account and wife's name on the account or the real estate. However, I really caution people because joint ownership, in my opinion, is one of the leading causes of people losing their wealth in this country. Money going to the wrong people, and it ends up with people that you never imagined would have your wealth, and they would just go to, and here's basically some of the common dangers of joint ownership. Number one, it is dangerous because the last person alive gets to control the entire asset. So I call it last man standing, although it's last woman standing as well. So last man standing gets full control over the asset. So if my wife and I own real estate together, if I pass away, my wife has full control over what happens with that real estate. Or if I own real estate with my brother, for example, if I pass away, he has full control over where that asset goes. I lose control once I pass away. I have no say where that asset goes. So, for example, sometimes I get clients and they inherit like a house from their mom and dad. And there, so there's two siblings that end up owning this house. And then one of those siblings dies, and the remaining sibling gets the whole house. The sibling who passed away, their family gets nothing. And that is one of the biggest reasons for what we call unintentional disinheritance, the money ending up with the wrong people. Also, some people see joint ownership as a way of avoiding probate. They figure they'll just put somebody on title with them, and if when they die, the person will get the property. And that's true, but at some point, there's going to be one person left. And you're simply postponing probate. That's all you're doing. You're just putting it off for a while. Because if I pass away and my wife remains on the house, at some point she's going to pass away. And then that house will indeed be going through the court process. The other thing that people should really know is that whenever you put somebody on title with you, you are adding a bullseye to your asset. A common thing that I see is an elderly person who's perhaps in their 70s or 80s, They entertain the idea of putting one of their children on title with them. And they'll say, I know, I'm going to put my son Bobby on title with me. And I say, hold on a minute, are you sure that's a good idea? Because if Bobby gets into any trouble whatsoever, let's say Bobby is driving down the street and he hits a little boy with his car, and that little boy's family gets a lawyer, anything with Bobby's name on it is fair game, including mom's home or mom's accounts, or anything with Bobby's name on it. So by putting people on title with you, you are adding bullseyes to it. The other thing that is very, very important is the issue of remarriage in this country. People are getting married 2, 3, 4 times in some cases, and so this is a very dangerous thing because here's how it works. My wife and I have 2 kids, okay? I got my son and my daughter. Let's say my wife and I are on title together, and then my wife passes away. If my wife passes away, maybe a few years later, it's possible I might meet somebody new and get remarried. And if I put my new wife on title with me on all of my assets, just like most people do, one day, what if I die? Guess who owns everything that my original wife and I worked so hard for? My new wife owns everything. And she could conceivably take all the assets and do whatever she wants with them. My children, my son and my daughter, get zero. And again, another example of unintentional disinheritance through joint ownership. And, you know, there's a whole other bunch of reasons that joint ownership is not a great idea. There are tax reasons that are too complicated to get involved in with here. I would recommend people talk with you about those things. But I think that covers some of the main dangers of joint ownership, Rebecca.
Okay. And, you know, lots of times when people do have joint ownership of assets, they are looking to a document that's called a living trust. Mm-hmm. Can you explain to us more what a living trust is?
Well, a living trust is nothing more than a contract. It's nothing mysterious. People get kind of mystified by this term living trust. It is a legal document that you can create either by yourself or with your spouse or with anybody else, really. And the legal contract says the following. Number one, you know, it tells everybody who you are. It tells everybody what you own. And it tells everybody, you know, if anything happens to me, I've chosen the following people to take care of my stuff in case anything happens to me. And finally, after I pass away, this is where I want my stuff to go, and to the following people, and in the following manner. So by reducing that to an example, my wife and I don't own anything. Robert and Lori Mansour don't own anything. What owns everything? The Mansour Family Trust. This document, this agreement that my wife and I made together. And our house is owned by our trust. All of our bank accounts are owned by our trust. Our investment accounts are owned by the Mansour Family Trust, not by me or by my wife. And the reason that's significant is that if I pass away, the Mansour Family Trust continues to own the assets, continues to govern those assets. If my wife passes away, same difference. The Mansour Family Trust continues to own and govern the assets and the distribution of those assets. There are three major benefits to having a trust, Rebecca. The first one, anything in the name of your trust, whether it's real estate, bank accounts, or investments, or whatever you put in, is avoiding the court system. That's number one. Number two benefit, anything in the name of the trust can be controlled by your trustees, people that you've chosen in advance to control your assets. And the number three benefit is that anything in the name of your trust will be governed by it. So whatever rules you have in your trust will govern the distribution of your assets. For example, my children are not going to receive their inheritance right away. They're going to receive their inheritance over the years. They're going to receive one-third at 25, one-third at the age of 30, and the balance at the age of 35, because I don't want them to squander their inheritance by receiving it at such a young age. So a living trust is a very important tool under this larger umbrella of estate planning. Does that help?
It does, absolutely. And you know, Rob, in segment one, we were talking about the possibility of having incapacity. Some, you know, who's going to help me take care of my stuff even while I'm still alive? Because we all know the probability of incapacity is sometimes greater than the probability of death.
Yes.
And it sounds like this living trust helps take care of that while you're still alive and for some reason you're not able to take care of your stuff. This living trust then will kick in. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And one of the serious issues that we need to understand is that one of the things a good trust should outline is the mechanism of succession. How do I know when the next trustee gets to come in? How are we going to define that? And there are so many nuances in a good living trust, and there are many different kinds of trust, by the way, not just one kind. And a lot of people think it's some kind of a drug that you take and everything is fine. Just like there are many different kinds of automobiles, there are many different kinds of living trusts. And you're absolutely right. Anything in the trust can be governed by the successor trustees, people that you've chosen in advance to manage your assets for you.
Very, very good. And you know, in segment one, you also mentioned something called a healthcare directive. And
yes.
I was wondering, could you kind of go over other documents that would be part of a typical estate plan?
Oh, absolutely. A living trust is part of a larger estate plan. That's something people should know because they often think it's just a trust. Other important documents are wills for the clients. A will that serves as a backup to the trust. In case something has to go through the court system, the will will direct all of the assets back to the trust in order for them to be governed by the trust. Another very important document you just mentioned is something in California we call the Advance Healthcare Directive, where you select people to care for you and to make healthcare decisions for you in case you cannot. And you can be as specific as you want to be in that document, and there's a lot of nuances that go into that, but again, there's too many to get into on this call. Another important document, I would say the big four are the Living Trust, the Healthcare Directive, the will that I just talked about, and finally, and in my opinion, perhaps the most important, is the durable power of attorney, where you select someone in advance to act on your behalf in virtually every other circumstance. And this person can talk to the credit card companies, can talk to your former employer, can talk to your lawyer, can talk to your CPA, can talk to the IRS. It goes on and on and on. And a very good durable power of attorney is part of a solid estate plan. And there are many other documents, for example, nominating guardians for your kids, business agreements, community property agreements, especially among married couples, whether there are any separate property issues that we need to address. All of those go into the larger umbrella, if you will, known as estate planning.
Rob, I wanted to ask you is the question, you know, lots of times people come to an attorney and they set up a living trust. But you were talking earlier about titling your home in the name of the trust, titling your bank account in the name of the trust. What happens if somebody just comes to you and sets up a living trust and their assets aren't put in the trust?
What you're hinting at here, and not even hinting at it, you're telling us essentially, this is probably the biggest reason that living trusts fail, Rebecca, is that people fail to take the time, once they create their trust, to change title to their assets. And they come to me and they said, but the trust says this and the trust says that. And I say, it doesn't matter because title trumps at the end of the day. If you own everything jointly with somebody, it doesn't matter what your living trust or your will says. It's irrelevant because the title to the asset trumps. So if I own everything jointly with my brother, for example, if I pass away, my brother gets everything. I don't care how many living trusts I have. I don't care how many wills. You must take the time to transfer your assets into the trust, and assets that you acquire in the future should be put into the name of the trust as well in order for them to be governed by it. Very good point.
And then the other thing, let's say somebody comes to an estate attorney like you, Rob, and they sit down and they do the living trust, and they do the advanced healthcare directive, and they do the will, and they do the durable power of attorney. But what happens if nobody is aware of it? Nobody knows where their documents are.
This does sometimes happen, too, which is why it's critical that people tell the people on their team that they're on the team. I mean, if you're going to pick trustees and agents and people to be guardians of your kids, you've got to let them know. So what I tell my clients is tell the people on your team where your binder is, where all your documents are. Let them know where they are because it doesn't help you just to keep it all a secret or to put it under your bed somewhere and nobody can find it. I also keep copies of my clients' documents as well. But by the same token, I don't always know when my clients pass away or if they get sick. So they really need to let their family members know where their documents are. They don't have to give them the documents to read. They can keep that private. But at the very least, tell everybody who needs to know where the documents can be found.
And Rob, would you think it'd be a good idea to put all these documents in a safe deposit box?
I'm against that, Rebecca. I think that usually leads to inability to access the documents. Some people do that, and then all of a sudden the family's trying to get into the box, but they can't, and you're stuck. I have my estate plan sitting in a binder on my bookcase in my home, and everybody who needs to know knows where it is, and I also keep a copy of it on a disk in my desk at the office, and the people who need to know are aware of that as well. And that's really, I think, the best thing to do. I don't want to make it hard for people to find my documents if they need to find them.
Absolutely, because, you know, lots of times these particular documents we're talking about are going to need to kick in on a moment's notice.
Right.
and they really need to be accessible.
You know, one thing, a trick that I tell some folks who, with their health care directive, I say you might want to make a copy of your health care directive, give it to the person that you've chosen, who's known as your agent, by the way, give it to that person and have them keep it in their glove compartment in their car. Because if they need to drive to the hospital or to act on your behalf, it would be really nice if they had a copy of your health care directive readily accessible to them in their glove compartment. So that's one way to do it. Another way to do it is to put your health care directive on your refrigerator, because a lot of health care professionals, paramedics, et cetera, are trained to look on the fridge, because a lot of people do keep their documents there.
Okay.
I know,
well,
it sounds silly.
yes, sorry. Yeah, but you know, like I'm saying, you never know. And you know, lots of times things happen in the spur of a moment, and you want to be able to grab these important documents so that your wishes can be carried out.
Exactly.
And on that note, we're going to take a break, but we'll be right back with Robert Mansour, attorney. Hello, this is Rebecca Robbins, and I am your host of the Santa Clarita Valley Local Leaders Show, and I am back with Rob Mansour, attorney of the law offices of Robert Mansour. And Rob, we've been talking about the importance of estate planning. Now, if there's someone listening out there that is interested in getting an estate plan, what is the steps that they need to take?
That's a great question. If they're working with me or any competent attorney, they should expect the following steps. Number one, they should call the lawyer. The hardest part is making that phone call. It really is, because once you've made the phone call and the appointment, in my estimation, everything is downhill from there because you've taken the most difficult step. So place a call, make an appointment with the attorney's office. It usually is going to be about 3 or 4 weeks down the line, because the lawyer is probably either going to send you or connect you with some kind of a questionnaire. I have all my clients fill out a questionnaire that's available on my website, or we can mail it to them, or both. And this questionnaire is going to walk you through all of the things that we talked about. Who do you want as your trustee? Who do you want to make health care decisions for you? Who do you want your guardians of your children to be, et cetera, et cetera? Once you fill out that questionnaire, you really should send it back to the lawyer's office along with copies of any assets that you have, because the lawyer is going to want to analyze not only your questionnaire, but also estate tax issues and any other important issues with respect to title. Then the lawyer will be well-equipped to provide you with a productive initial meeting. During that initial meeting, mine usually lasts about an hour and a half, where we sit down together, we come up with a plan, we address the client's concerns, and everybody feels good at the end of the meeting because we have a good direction of where we're going to go. After that, about 3 weeks later, the clients will receive drafts of their documents in the mail. And I also include a summary of those documents for the clients, and I highlight particular passages in the documents that I want them to pay attention to, especially, you know, specific attention to. And then if everything is working fine, the clients come in to sign the documents at the very end. And at that point, at least in my office, we scan all the documents to the computer. We give the clients a disk of all of their documents as well as the original hard copies for them in a nice binder that's organized for them. And it's also full of instructions for not only them to read, but also their successor trustees to read as well. So that's kind of an overview of the process.
And then, Rob, how many people reach you?
Well, they can always call the office. The phone number is I'm a local here in Santa Clarita area, so it's 661-414-7100. Or there's also an 800 number, which is 800-799-7449. And, of course, they can also find me on the Internet. I have two websites, and the reason I do that is because I have two areas of practice, so I kind of divide them up into the two sites. The first website is my last name, mansourlaw.com. So Mansour spelled M-A-N-S-O-U-R, then the word law, L-A-W.com. And that website is dedicated to the estate planning part of the practice. And then I also have a different website for my personal injury practice, and that one is www.valencialawyer.com. So those are the two easiest ways to reach me.
And Rob, you are located in Santa Clarita Valley. What is your address?
Oh, yes. I'm off of Copper Hill. So Copper Hill is near New Hall Ranch Road in that area. My address is 28212 Kelly Johnson Parkway, Suite 110, and that's in Valencia, California, 91355. And there are also directions on my website as well as the address as well.
Very good. And Rob, we have about 1 minute. Would you like to do any type of additional wrap-up for our listeners as to why estate planning is so important?
I really just want people to just take 5 minutes and or 10 minutes and take a look at their situation and ask themselves, you know, am I okay with this? Should I really I think the best thing to say is that they really should talk to a lawyer. Ask the lawyer. I mean, sometimes clients come to me and I say, look, you don't need to do this, or you don't need to do X, Y, or Z. You only need to do part of it. But even a good health care directive is better than nothing. And there are some free resources that I can tell clients about if they call my office that I can direct them to as well. They're not great, but it's better than nothing. And so just be proactive. I guess that's the best thing I can tell folks.
That is great advice. And if you'd like to get in contact with Rob, all you have to do is go to www.mansourlaw.com, M-A-N-S-O-U-R, law, L-A-W.com. Also, his phone number is 661-414-7100, and he will help you plan for your stuff and for your family and for your children. And Rob, I want to thank you so much for being my guest today.
It's been a privilege, Rebecca. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and may you all have a great day.